this in order for VR to pay for it. So I just don't want it to be represented that it would just be a check the agency could cut, because it is a process. Thank you.
Right.
Thank you, Brian.
Yeah, because I believe VR, one of the main requirements are you have to be making minimum wage. Whatever the standard is for minimum wage for the state of Connecticut, that's what you have to be making. So if you don't meet that standard, you don't qualify. That's just one of the main things, just to throw that out there, based off of whatever you're applying for and at the time in which you're applying for it.
Vocational rehabilitation, that's correct.
It's correct, right.
Yes.
So I have a question, a thought just popped in my head. So if by now most people have already filed taxes or for, you know, claiming losses. So if you are not resuming, does that mean then that you're, if you owe, oh, this was my main thought, I'm sorry. So if you are owed, if you owed inventory, can this go against that and then call that as a wash or accredited to the inventory if you were, like we were saying, in a negative stance for where you don't qualify for any current funding? Is that another voted issue, or is that a way that they can kind of wash it, or it doesn't work that way?
I would say, Brian... I guess the only thought I would have is that the federal funds that we received were for losses that were not otherwise compensated, and it sounds to me that what Tyrell is describing is a situation by which the person was otherwise compensated because they got other funds that offset
right.
their losses, so they don't actually have a loss because they got, let's say, he gave the example of unemployment insurance. That after the amount that the committee waived, that they would not count, that they still got additional unemployment insurance well above and beyond that, to the point that it offset all their losses, then there'd be no losses that are reportable that could be compensated. That's how I'm understanding the example he's given.
Okay, Bridget.
Tyrell, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think how you explain the example.
Correct. I would say, you know, we use the word negative in the wrong light, but essentially it's a positive. You know, many operators, not only say many, but there are several operators who have received well over, and even in some cases, more than they made in 2019. So, you know, this is a good thing. I mean, you know, obviously, I just want to reiterate, I understand, I think we all understood the initial intent of this FRRP fund was to just pretty much be this, you know, use it. However, you know, this was going to be really a relief in the sense of just providing income to operators while closed. The guidance received stated otherwise. And so when we factor in the guidance received, this is essentially what we're up against, and this is what has to be clearly understood, that, you know, we have rules and regulations in which we have to follow to dispense these funds, and how and how we do so, and what needs to be factored in doing so. So yes, this is correct.
Well, the way I would understand all this is if you're reopening, you have two options. You can either take your inventory loss as a loss, or you can go through both rehab or reimbursement once you reopen. That's number one. Number two, if you're not reopening, you're not able to get reimbursed for opening inventory because you're not going to have any. So then you would take your inventory as a loss of 2020. Then you look at whether you had any losses. Like what you said, if you still made more elsewhere, then it's cut and dry. You're not eligible for the funds. That's how I view it as a whole.
Correct.
That pretty much makes sense.
So that's how I. Yeah.
Yeah. So do we need that as a motion? I don't think how that would be worded.
Okay. Yeah. I think we should. I don't know if you just repeat what you just said. I think it would just be good to have it on file as, you know, as true guidance as to the determination made. So if you don't mind reiterating it just in that manner, I think that would be ideal.
Now the motion to go. If you're maybe just more simple saying, if for facilities that are going to reopen, you have an option of getting reimbursed through VR or the agency, and if you're not reopening, you don't have that option.
Don't forget the funding, the funds.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I'm wondering, I understand you're struggling to come up with the right wording, and maybe it's because we already through the plan that we got approved by Rehab Services Administration have this covered, that I think that perhaps the plan that we have is indicating that if your losses were not otherwise compensated, you could go, you know, and submit it for these federal stimulus funds, but if they were otherwise compensated, you wouldn't be able to. So perhaps, it's up to you, it's certainly up to the committee, but perhaps it is
really
language. It's just been reaffirmed, and the minutes themselves can just say that it's been reaffirmed that was the correct interpretation.
But yeah, that'll work, yeah. That would be good.
Up to you, Mr. Chairman. That might
suffice. Yeah, I think so. And I am, as you said, struggling with the wording. That's the only holdup. Well, I think we all know what we mean, but trying to make sense in a motion. Anyone from the committee have any thoughts or want to make a motion to that extent? And are we looking at just inventory? Are we talking about just the inventory, or are we talking about losses as a whole?
I would say we were talking about losses as a whole, I think, would be, because inventory would be included in that. So I would say losses as a whole should be.
So the motion could state that operators, I had it and I lost it.
Operators who experienced losses due to COVID-19 in the year of 2020, I guess were eligible for compensation if not otherwise compensated
elsewhere.
It's, you know, kind of like that.
And this is why, so what I'm saying is that's what the federal rules that already got handed down to us in the committee in an earlier vote proposed how that was going to be apportioned, and then RSA approved it. So that's where I think, as you're all trying to come up with some wording around what a motion would look like, it's perhaps you're struggling because that was already the plan you submitted. And that was already the plan of RSA approved. So I think.
So do we actually need another motion if it's already there?
No.
No. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, we probably don't. If there, we don't need anything else. Some people are going to qualify for, and some people aren't.
Right. I think we can just kind of say that we've discussed this and we regained clarity as to what's already in place. So there's no need for a motion.
And the other thing is, if you go back to the September meeting, it kind of deals with the inventory in that meeting already. You know, it says if you reopen, you're eligible for reimbursement. If you don't reopen, then you're not. And then it goes back to the law of the funds. If you had losses, you're eligible for funds. If you didn't have losses, you're not. So I think we're really already covered in other areas.
Right. So I think we're good. So we should be fine with that. Like I stated, I noted that there are several people that obviously have been compensated exceeding their amount. So I just wanted to bring it to attention as to guidance, I guess we could say, that's in place in regards to reimbursement. So we should be good. All right. So we can actually move along. Does anyone have any additional questions in regards, or are we good? We can move along on the agenda.
I think we're good.
Okay. So the next item on the agenda is the United States Coast Guard Academy update. All right. So as I think we've discussed previously, we, the agency, Randolph Shepherd Program, actually received acknowledgement on the proposal or the RFP for the United States Coast Guard Academy, which was big. There was a lot of behind-the-scenes work done to assure that, I don't want to call it priority, but it is a priority. We didn't get first right opportunity, but it's a priority acknowledgement to the Coast Guard opportunity, along with Women's Small Business Group. So that was big news, and then in turn, we were able to identify a operator who was, you know, no secret, is on the call. Dave Pelagi has decided to accept this potential opportunity. So we are extremely excited about that. In turn, Dave, his lovely wife, myself, Tracy, and his teaming partner actually had an opportunity to visit the Coast Guard last week to kind of be able to assess this opportunity. And it is a very, very large opportunity. I feel hopeful. I think Dave feels hopeful. Dave's teaming partner seems to be confident in this potential opportunity. When we did meet last week, we were amongst a group of, I believe, 26 individuals in total. There were 13 different locations or businesses that participated through the walkthrough. And it's a massive overtaking, but you know, essentially, I think we're doing everything we can as an agency. I know Dave is doing everything on behind the scenes, working with his teaming partner to ensure that a proposal is sent in by the June 11th deadline. So this could be very, very big, and while I was walking the grounds with Dave and Tracy, you know, certainly I think my thought process for our program's future was kind of really identified through the walkthrough. I think, we could potentially be much bigger than we think we can if we start to position ourselves mentally and also start making contacts, maybe through you guys, through the committee, with, you know, potentially teaming partners that may be of interest to take on other potential larger opportunities through state government. I think we're in a time now where, you know, we single-handedly can't do business on our own. I think that's the reality. I think when you just look back as to how businesses swallowed up other businesses, it's by the means of the larger ones coming involved, larger players being involved to essentially take over any potential business opportunities. So I think when we look to resume as operators in locations, we have to change our thought process to potentially maybe include bigger players with bigger capital, with bigger contacts, with, you know, maybe better layouts of how to do business and better pricing, better cost, those that can do things bigger, utilizing our opportunity, our first right opportunity, but partnering up in a manner that allows for us to, you know, think big and actually achieve those goals. So I'm optimistic with this Coast Guard situation. It really comes down to numbers at this point. And so we'll have to wait and see. I know Dave, he is on the call, but I know he's super excited. I'm excited, and, you know, I think the agency as a whole is excited. So we'll see, you know, that's to be continued. Yeah. All right. So now we can go into site surveys. There are three. I want to make note. We did add Southern Connecticut State University, which we can talk about as the third site survey, but we do need to modify this agenda to include Southern Connecticut State University. But to start off, we can discuss Southeastern Mental Health. Let me grab that information. Chairman Haley, have you had a chance to review? I hope the committee as a whole had a chance to review and be able to make a vote of determination on this particular location. Southeastern Mental Health Authority Food Service, the Brief Care Program Food Service Opportunity. This is a location out in Norwich, Connecticut. Brief Care Program is a specific program within, I assume, a larger agency. So ultimately, this program is structured to limit 15 beds for residential program. Again, serving individuals experiencing psychiatric symptoms who do not require inpatient level of care. So ultimately, these are people that can come in on a day-to-day basis for their medical needs while having an opportunity to be able to stay on the premise while doing so. The operation days and hours are 24 hours, 365 days a year. There's a max bed of 15 beds in which occupants can utilize, and in speaking with this organization, essentially they average anywhere, I believe, from, I think, 7 to 11 beds. And the requirements within this program is to provide 3 meals, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. It's a 365-day operation. What else do we have? All food meal requirements would have to be created by a credible chef, as there's dietary requirements. And in turn, there's very little public patronization going on in that particular location. So therefore, in reality, it just is not a viable, in my opinion, option. But I do push this back to the committee to weigh in on the information provided.
Yes, once again, I was talking on mute again. I'm sorry.
No worries. You see how I covered that guy just boom.
Well, you actually answered my question. It wasn't a question, but because I said, could you refresh us on the highlights of this facility, and you went right into it, so it was perfect. I was like, I wasn't even on mute. But yeah, it doesn't seem like a viable location for the 15 beds, and it's a 365-day operation. Isn't this the place where they actually cooked food off-site and almost catered it, or was that the other one?
Well, actually, too, but yes, correct. So in speaking with the manager who currently operates under the contract, they indeed do cook off-site. They found very early on it was not financially viable to create food on-site. Therefore, since they tend to provide this type of service to other locations very similar throughout the state, they chose to use their commissary, I believe in the Hartford location, to create the items and just essentially deliver. But another piece to this puzzle as well was, because I just used the word deliver, you are also responsible to have a staff member provide the food directly to each person's room or however the setup is. So it's not just a matter of providing food and allowing, you know, these individuals to come down and retrieve their food, but you actually have to have someone bring the food to each dorm room or room. So yes. Yes.
I don't know if any committee member, I would recommend to waive this location, as it just doesn't sound viable for us. Does any other committee member have any discussion, or would somebody like to make a motion to waive it? Anyone from the committee want to make a motion?
I'll make a motion to Steve Hilliard to waive the location.
All right. Can I get a second on that?
I'll second it.
Okay. So I've got a motion by Steve Hilliard, seconded by Carmella. Any further discussion? All those in favor of waiving this facility, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say no. Any abstentions? Motion carries.
Okay. All right. Moving along, we can go into Adnuntuck Community College Site Survey. And I'll start off by saying this. Community colleges, certainly when you just hear the word college, it always sounds like, oh, yeah, this is definitely a viable opportunity, no question. And I would agree to some extent. We do have some hurdles to get over with some of our other colleges, in which I'm sure we will, I'm confident. But this particular location, Adnuntuck Community College, is a beautiful college located in Enfield, designed improperly. And I think that I picked up on that right away, so much so that when I created this site survey, essentially I may have missed including, that's why I doubled back, some things that essentially you would include on any other site survey, because I was able to witness in literally 2 seconds that the layout of that location is not properly laid out for food service. So I did meet with the dean of students, I believe, at the college. Essentially, he provided me, we took a tour of the school. It's a large school, as you notice in the site survey, that offers even adult ed after-hour programs. And I think they pride themselves on that because they do such a wonderful job and their layout is so great. However, their only food source is literally, I would say, set up as, I want to say like a, you know, I just kind of give you the visual, like almost a cafe. When I say cafe, like almost a coffee stand. Just it's their food service is cut out of a little nook, with no proper ventilation system installed. Really focusing and utilizing equipment such as ovens and warming tables, steam tables. A lot of their refrigeration, there's no walk-in unit. The refrigeration is actually outside. They have a couple units in within the actual cafe space, but they have additional equipment outside in another room because they couldn't fit all of the equipment. And their menu options included everything that does not emit grease. So essentially you can't use any griddle items, no hot dogs, no hamburgers, no bacon, no sausage, anything that emits grease that would require a hood system is not being offered. Prior to COVID, they had a local caterer providing the food service. And again, this is another situation in which, based off of the layout and the equipment that is offered by the school to produce food, this company, this catering company, chose to, I believe, and as well as the dean seems to believe, create their food at their commissary and transport food over to the college. I don't know if it's daily or I would assume based off of whatever the menu option is. The menu was very basic. The operation days and hours are eight to seven, in reality, 8 a.m. to 7, Monday through Thursday. And then there was a typical period in which I thought was used to close between, if I'm not mistaken, I thought it was somewhere between 1 to 3, but then receiving additional information from the college, the current operator or the previous operator decided to just stay open all day. So there's a couple concerns. Obviously, one, we have to factor in payroll. You know, being able to hire, I would say, essentially 2 people, even though it wouldn't call for 2 people, but you would need 2 people. The layout is very poor. You would be stepping over toes. I think that would obviously exhaust all of the financial profitability. In addition, I think my follow-up letter, if I'm not mistaken, identified the current food service cash gross sales to be $2,400 per week. So that's very, very low. And then, this operator, or the current operator, chose to just keep an employee operating at the location for its entire day. So I would assume that they felt it was financially feasible to operate that way instead of closing for that period between school and night school. So the current operator has had the option to utilize their last year contract agreement, because essentially they signed a 2-year agreement with a 4-year individual 1-year extension, which this year would allow for them to utilize shall they choose. And speaking with the dean, he does not believe, or at this time, the current food provider was really on the fence of resuming, doesn't think he was going to. So essentially was looking for us to see if we had any interest in taking this location. Just as a side note, we did waive this location, I believe, previously. I didn't have the previous site survey to pick up on what the determination was, but I would have to assume it would have to have been due to the layout and the hours required and the profitability. I mean, $2,400 per week gross sales isn't going to really yield anyone anything, and that's prior to COVID. So, Chairman, I'd forward this back to you for any further comments or questions.
Yeah, once again, what you kind of laid out for us doesn't sound like we could put an operator in there to really be successful. Which is, we're trying to stay away from those types of locations that someone can't make a decent wage or living there. I don't know if anyone from the committee has any other thoughts on this location, or if not, if somebody just wants to make a motion to waive it, if you don't have any other thoughts. Any committee member?
Motion to waive the location.
So that's Carmella. Can I get a second on that?
I second.
Is that Dave?
Yes, Dave Pelagi.
All right, so we got a motion by Carmella to waive this location and seconded by Dave Pelagi. Can we get is there any other discussion? All those in favor of waiving this location, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say no. Any abstentions? And the motion carries.
Okay. All right. Added to the agenda is Southern Connecticut State University site survey. This one, I'll be able to provide some information. I did forward to all of you, so hopefully you've read this. It is pretty lengthy, and we actually just received this, unfortunately, just last week. So, again, Southern. Yep.
Gonna need a motion. You're gonna need the committee to vote to amend the agenda to add this first.
Oh, okay.
Can I get a motion from a committee member to amend the agenda to add Southern Connecticut State University to the agenda today?
This is Steve Hillier. I would like to see it added to the agenda.
All right. Motion made by Steve Hillier. Can I get a second on that?
Shelley, second.
Shelley on the second. Any other discussion? All those in favor of amending the agenda to add Southern Connecticut State University to today's agenda, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say no. Any abstentions? And the motion carries. You can proceed.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Southern Connecticut State University, they reached out to us last Monday, May 24th, in regards to a potential food service opportunity. SDSU is working under an emergency procurement for operations of its dining halls with Sodexo. Their prior food service provider unfortunately walked away due to profitability during COVID. The Office of Attorney General's will not allow the agreement to be executed without a first right of refusal determination by our agency, our program. Sodexo has been providing the